Welcome to Boundless. I'm Kathy Eldon. In these delicious conversations, we meet artists, activists, founders, and visionaries of all kinds who show us what becomes possible when we refuse to be defined by fear, loss, or limitation. This is a space for anyone ready to reclaim their creativity, trust their spark, and help shape a better future. I'm excited that no matter how chaotic the world is, I'm lucky to speak with people who give me hope and inspiration. Today, singer, philosopher, and my muse, Tihani, and I are just off a conversation with Iman Jordan, a singer, songwriter, a philosopher whose words have traveled the world not only through himself, but also through artists like Rihanna and Alicia Keys. Iman's gift lies in his ability to capture emotion with honesty and precision, turning lived experiences into lyrics that resonate across cultures and generations. Behind every unforgettable song is someone who knows how to listen to themselves, to others, and to the moment. And Iman brings that rare sensitivity to everything he creates. Iman represents the spirit of boundless, that creative expression that can move us, connect us, and remind us of what it means to be truly human. You will not want to miss what he has to say.
Iman, I am so happy to have you here, and welcome back to Tihani.
I'm excited. Good to see you both. I'm jealous that you're in Bali, but I'm so happy to see you, and it's awesome to be here.
Well, thank you. Don't make us feel badly about where we are, okay?
I'm going to make you feel badly about Bali. I'm on my master plans to bring you all out here. So songwriting retreats and things that are in the works. So don't worry, there will be boundless retreats over here to bring you both to.
I love
You're
it.
So all right, so Iman, so just plunging right in. I'm from Iowa. I think I told you that when we met. And we met through Gina Belafonte, can I just say, one of my great heroines and somebody whose judgment I really, really trust. And you got the Harry Belafonte Impact Award, Grammy.
Yeah.
And so that's a long journey from Cincinnati. You know,
yeah.
This is I don't know how that Cincinnati boy got from there to here.
And I don't know.
You know, I'd like a little bit of a rundown on that before we even start. Just like put us in the picture.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, so I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio. Grew up in a musical family. So my grandfather was a jazz and blues guitarist who played for King's Records. So he was a studio musician, played for Charles Brown and James Brown. He's on some really like some Christmas classics. So he played music. And then my grandmother on my dad's side is also a singer. She's a diva. So she shows up, you know, to the grocery store in a gown and she'll sing to you every birthday. And also my dad is a musician as well. So music's always been in the family, but I've always tried to like, I was trying to push it down because I was like, I don't want to do music. I know the struggles my dad has gone through with trying to do music and my grandfather. So I went to Morehouse College, decided to get a regular career. I was going to be a strategy consultant, got a job in New York as a strategy consultant, even though I also got a music degree at Morehouse College. And it's one of those things that like music just called me, you know, it's one of those things that I tried to fight it, but then I would find myself somewhere and someone would say, hey, you sing, right? And then I would end up singing something and it led to other things, you know? And so, and I was a horrible strategy consultant, you know, I was terrible at it. So I ended up putting together this really terrible demo in these Brooklyn basements. There was a guy who moved into my house. He was supposed to stay with us for like 3 weeks and he ended up staying for 4 months. He overstayed his welcome. But he was a rapper and he took me with him to these really, really jank studios. I'll call them jank, where the engineer is falling asleep while I'm recording kind of thing. Back to the dryer and all that kind of stuff. So anyways, I put together this pretty horrible demo in my mind and I take it to a producer who was working with Eve and Troy Carter and he was moving out to LA and he said, hey, I love this. Why don't you be my artist and come out to LA? So I quit my job and moved to LA and started doing music for TV and started doing the live scene, which eventually led me to put music up on MySpace. This is the MySpace Records days a long time ago. And I was able to get features on MySpace and ended up signing to MySpace Records, which is pretty wild because people don't even know that there was a record label.
No.
But I signed to MySpace Records with a singles deal. And I was like, you know, this is while MySpace is tanking at this point. So this is like, I always tell the analogy, like I was the violinist on the Titanic as it was going down. I was still playing, you know, but it was really great because I put out a project there and I got the attention of this producer, Crucial Keys, who did a lot, all of the Alicia Keys stuff. And he wanted to sign me as one of his artists. And so I ended up signing to him. So the backstory is that at that time I used to go by Mateo. So that was my name back then. And it was for a lot of different reasons. It was because I wasn't Iman, which is my real name. Iman was this geeky guy who did business stuff and was pretty good in school and all that kind of stuff. And in my mind, he probably didn't really deserve the attention to be this superstar that I wanted to be. And so, and also I was also hiding other things like my sexuality at the time. So it was just an alter ego that I kind of leaned on. And so I started putting out music with Crucial Keys, got to work with Alicia Keys as well. We put out a record independently called Say It So, and she's singing on the background on the record, along with Swizz Beatz, who's like yelling on the record. And we charted independently with that. Yeah, and we put it out. I ended up getting the attention of Interscope, and so I signed to Interscope after that. And I put out another record called How Good Is Your Love, which was one of the records I love this record. I really loved it. But I knew that it was dead at radio. So, you know, it's one of those things where you're an artist, you have to go through the label system, try to get all these different teams within the label to jump on board your project. But it was really hard for me to figure out what to say or what my identity was because I really wasn't comfortable with who I was at the time. And so one story I have to tell is that so that song I knew was dead at radio, but I was living in New York. I was so broke. I was dead broke. I had just picked up my first like catering gig. I had a catering gig at the Natural History Museum. And on the first day of my gig, there's a show called 106 in Park. Have you ever heard of that show? 106 in Park? BET, it was on BET. And it's a countdown show. And my song made the countdown. So they invited me on the show onto BET to perform the same day as my first day of my catering gig. And I was sweating because I was like, I need to make this catering gig. And they're running late on production. And I was like, I cannot miss this gig. And I was on TV and I did an interview with Lil Bow Wow and whoever else was the host sang. And then I was after that literally running through the streets of New York to get to my gig at the Natural History Museum. And it was depressing. It was absolutely like, it was terrible. And I sat there thinking like, this is not how this is supposed to go. You know, I'm supposed to be celebrating. I just sang on TV and now I'm broke and I'm, you know, it was really sad. So it put me on a journey of trying to figure things out. I was really depressed. And then it finally came to me that I had to be very true to who I am. And one of the things that I know a lot of other artists were doing were hiding their lifestyle and sexuality and all that stuff. But me, it was something that I needed to be true about and authentic about. And I think that was what was holding me back. And so I came out like maybe 3 months after that. I told my mom, who didn't know. And so the second person who found out was my mom's boss, because I told her she was at work and she fell out at work. And then my boss, her boss found out. And anyways, all that to say, I did that and I came out and felt good about who, you know, I was feeling really good about who I am, who I was. And Interscope brought me back out to California to do some songs. And some of those songs actually became some other records that got placed, one being Rihanna's Desperado. And so I got a placement on Rihanna's Desperado from a song I did originally for me. Got dropped from Interscope, ended up doing the publishing songwriting rounds. And I went around the world songwriting because of that Desperado record. And then it was about 2018 when I decided to come back to my independent project and do Iman Jordan and start working on music for myself. And that's kind of the arc of the story.
That leaves 2018 to 2026 that we can dive into. So do you want to dive?
Well, the cool thing is that I found love in the process. My partner is he's an interior designer, but also a production designer. So we're a very creative house. Start putting out music independently. We make music videos together. I was putting music videos out independently. And it wasn't until 2022 or 2023, actually, when after COVID, that I was, you know, really just thinking about the state of the world and having these conversations with my friends and just feeling so much angst about what's happening with the world and how we can't communicate with each other. And we're so divided. And so I decided to put out a project about it. And it was a project that I didn't think anybody would listen to because I was thinking, like, people are going to say, this is sad. I don't really listen to this. But I did it. And one of the songs was a song called Deliver.
Yeah.
That I did. I wrote it really for a Christmas party I had at my house that I wanted to perform. And I sang it there. And then I decided to put it out and to make a reel on Instagram for it. And people really resonated with it. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to put this record out. And then it has some virality to it. Like, people were really interested in the record, which really surprised me. And so I also put out another record called War after that. And a friend of mine hit me and said, hey, you should submit this record for this new category. And I was like, I'm not going to win this category because I'm like, they're going to pick some big artist. Like, there's no way I'm going to win this category. But I was also in my I'm a follow through era. And I was like, I'm a follow through. Just do it. And I submitted the record. And then 3 months after that, on a random December evening at midnight, the Recording Academy sent an email out and said, hey, we want to jump on a phone call, on a Zoom call. And then that's how I found out that I won the Harry Belafonte Best Song for Social Change Award for that record, which was insane. And it was insane on so many levels, not also just because, you know, I did this independently, but also I had my dad playing on the record. So my dad's playing guitar at the end of the record, and he has writing credit on the record. So he was also on the call, and he won a Grammy as well. So it was a very insane, insane experience. And also for it to be the first time it's named after, of course, one of my heroes, Harry Belafonte, it was even, you know, it was scary at first because I was like, I can't, there's no way I can fill the shoes of a man like that. But it was also like, it was inspiring and beautiful. So
you have a feeling that Gina was seeing more than the lyrics. She was seeing a sort of Harry and a young Harry energy in you. In conversations with you, it just feels like, oh my God, you know, Harry was on her shoulder saying, he's the guy. He's the guy. Also that one.
Also, well, I mean, I hope so. I mean, one of the things that was really cool about winning it, and then there was a reception after I won the award, and there were so many people that came up to me and were like, psst, hey, you know, the reason why this won is because I was the one really rooting for this record. And then we would go, I'll go somewhere else and say, hey, psst, let me tell you, I'm the one who. And also Gina had her story. She was like, Gina was like, I just remember my dad, and there was this room he would listen to records in. There was this room in the house, and his face when he was listening to something, and he started like vibing to it. And she said that when she heard the record, she could see his face like, making that face, she said, that's the one. So
I love, I call that noisy spirits. I'm a firm believer that energy surrounds us and that these remarkable energy of people we love can be around us and influence us. And the fact that she saw that noisy spirit face is like that confirmation for me. That's totally brilliant.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued. Did your music change when you became true to yourself? Did your language, did your themes change? This is a great leap change.
Yeah, I mean, it really did. I think that, you know, I lean more into what's really just happening right in front of me. And I mean, it's the thing is, like, a lot of times, I think before I was chasing the trends, I was chasing what I thought people wanted to hear from me. And then as opposed to just listening to what's on my heart right now. And I think that that's changed the subject matter of what I sing about, especially singing about the world. I, you know, that's something that I've always felt. I come from a family that's very much an activist type of family. And that's what we talk. That's what our group chats, my family group chats go off. I mean, they're just like, you know, look what he did now. And it's like, and then, you know, it's all about that. So now leaning into that message more is definitely more because I'm more true to who I am and more sitting in the power of who I am. And it's still a discovery process because it's still very scary. You know, it's, you know, I know y'all know that it's a very scary, it's an uncomfortable place to be, but then also the most rewarding place to be.
That's actually what I really wanted to ask you too, because I think so many people right now feel the desire to share, to speak, to create freely and honestly, but because of that fear or that scary feeling, a lot of people just skip over it. So what is something that you would offer, maybe even to like a former version of yourself who is out there right now, you know, who is still at that first intersection of like, I know the expression of myself that's more authentic and free, but I'm sort of like right behind that sort of, you know, glass ceiling of feeling like I can do it. Do you have any words for him, for them?
I would say that the crazy thing is that what the world needs is exactly who you are. Mm. And because you have such a unique, as a person, everyone has a unique perspective that only they have, a unique talent, a unique mix of talents. And a lot of times we think that we have to do something else when it really is the thing that we already care about, or the thing that already lights us up. And that's what the world is even asking from us. I know that right now it's hard to even feel very empowered because there's so much craziness happening and a lot of it's out of our control. But the answer to that is actually us leaning more into who we are and leaning into our gifts in a very niche way, in a very specific way, you know, and because we don't really know how that ripples out into the world, you know, and I think a lot of times we get so mesmerized by these numbers, these impact numbers and these instant feedback loops of Instagram and social media. I fall victim to this all the time. But really, you have no idea. You make a song, and I'm sure you've heard this before, where you made a song and someone was like, oh my God, like I used to listen to that song a few years ago all the time. And it actually, I decided to stay on this earth longer. Or I went and hugged my mom because she was going through it with cancer or whatever it is. And you never really know those things when you're doing it, you know? So I would tell myself, or my younger self, exactly how I was made and what I care about and what I'm passionate about is exactly what I'm supposed to be doing, because that's what the world needs from me.
Can I just jump in? You've reminded me of something. This is called Boundless. It's my new book. But it leads with this thing called a vital quickening. And it's so utterly perfect for what you're saying. It's by Martha Graham, who was a great dancer. There's a vitality, a life force, a quickening that is translated through you into action. And there is only one of you in all time. The expression is unique. And if you block it, it will never exist through any other medium and it will be lost. The world will not have it. It's not your business to determine how good it is nor how it compares with other expression. It's your business to keep it yours clearly and directly and to keep the channel open. You do not even have to believe in yourself or your work. You have to keep open and aware directly to the urges that motivate you. Keep the channel open. No artist is pleased. There's no satisfaction, whatever, at any time. There's only a queer, divine dissatisfaction, a blessed unrest that keeps us marching and makes us more alive than the others.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant. I mean, it's just exactly what you're saying. It's like,
it is.
Yeah, I'm thinking of your journey, you know, like as an artist and as what I would call a creative activist. I think you call it an artivist, which is another great word. But how do you keep that imagination of yours boundless and your courage switched on, just as you were talking about, when the world feels so incredibly overwhelming? What are you tapping into?
Yeah, I mean, it's something it's a daily practice, because I mean, there are so many different things that are happening and you're like, wow, that's crazy. I think that I start with a morning ritual of meditation. So I meditate every morning. I do that before I turn my phone on, before I listen to whoever has to say anything about anything. It's like, I don't want you to prime my day or to like set me on a course. I want to set my own course. And I think that that's really important. And then also, you know, I think that like when it comes to especially activist work, and I'm still really kind of growing in this space, but you know, what's the saying? You can't stare at the darkness. You can look at it, but you can't stare at it, or you'll become the darkness, you know? And so I think that's one thing that's important, is being able to look at it, but not stare at it, not dwell on it. And that means actually going out and leaning into the joyful things in your life, the things you can control. And so that I have to remind myself, like, hey, pet my dogs. Like, go pet the dog, you know, like, you know what I'm saying? Go on a walk, you know. There's so much wisdom in in the nature and the everything else that surrounds us that actually, you know, it may not solve the problem. It may actually dissolve the problem, which is even better, you know? And mm-hmm. so that's something that like I try to lean into. And I love that quote from the book because you don't necessarily have to believe it in yourself, it says, which is kind of crazy because it's like people want to wait till they're like, oh no, I know I am Beyonce and I just want to, that's when I'll start doing music. And it's like, no, like it's a trust fall every time, every day. It's a trust fall. Like it's, you know, there's many times you just do not believe and you wake up and you're like doubting yourself the whole time. But then you just kind of have to stay true to whatever that vision is or that calling or whatever, you know, how you said it.
That queer divine dissatisfaction, the blessed unrest that keeps us marching.
I
on the cover of my another book, a memoir, it's like a restless spirit. You know, it's like, I know I'm restless. I have no idea if there's a definition, but there's a drive inside me to do more, be more, feel more, express more. And it drives everybody crazy around me. I know that. And that, yeah. I don't know about you, Iman, and your partner, but would you feel that? What's inside you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I do. I feel like I have to kind of distinguish between what is pulling me. Is it a desire to be sometimes seen or a desire to be even wealthy, like those things versus something deeper, you know? And I have to kind of figure out, well, what is it that I'm feeling right now? Because on one side, me trying to maybe chase some of the lower vibrational stuff, that drives a lot of people crazy, you know, that around me. But the things that feel a little bit more like grounded and true and centered, then those things may not drive people crazy too much around me. They'll be like, okay, maybe, okay, I'll go with that. There's also this quote I love. It's by Michael Beckwith. And he says, pain pushes until vision pulls. And so also when it's, and you're in those moments and I'm feeling like, I don't know where to go or man, everything's just not working out. But understanding that that's pushing me towards something that's this greater vision that's going to pull me and I'm going to go no matter what, you know, so it's, it's just kind of figuring that out, you know.
I really love what you're saying. And yeah, we love that you mentioned Michael Beckwith because he's a dear, dear friend and Creative Visions family member. And he's going to have a conversation with Kathy soon as well. So we're going to tell him that you said that. Loop these conversations together. But I love what you're saying because in Boundless, in Kathy's book, the chapter, The Waiting Game, really talks about this sort of, you know, which I think so many artists and creatives can really relate to, is just this period where you kind of feel like you're stuck between two different spaces. There's like the space that you came from and the space that you know you are meant to go into, like a waiting room, but it's a waiting game, you know, and it kind of feels like it's a head game and it's a life game, which is internal and external. And I think that what you're saying is so powerful because that idea of things that are pushing you and pulling you when you're in that waiting game period, mm-hmm. it feels like it is almost this forced period of waiting so that life invites us to sort of sort out for ourselves what is driving us. Is it something that's a more self-validating or sort of, you know, a corrective experience? Like, I want to be famous so that I want this book to be a success so that, or is it, I feel deeply that I need to communicate this or express this. And it's almost like as soon as we really get to that push-pull place with ourselves and we kind of unlock what truly is driving us, there's this breath and then things kind of open up. What you're describing sounds exactly like that to me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can say that there was a waiting period after winning the Harry Belafonte Award. And I knew it was going to come. I knew there was a high that was there and I knew that it was going to be a correction of some sort, but also a new direction, you know, about what I'm doing and where I'm meant to go. And I was pretty confused about it because I was like, okay, you know, I had a lot of people in my ears like, okay, you got to make sure you capture the momentum, you know? So jump on it and hit people up and like start doing things and put another song out and da, 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 da. And that felt not right for what I was feeling. Like I was like, I feels like I'm just forcing it to try to capture some momentum, but not actually letting it settle. Like, you know, the only way to let, what they say, muddy water settle is, or muddy, clear muddy water is to let it settle, right? So, and I was confused. I was really not sure what the next move was because, you know, people in my mind, when you win a Grammy, a lot of those people are already really huge artists. So it's like, okay, well, now for me, I'm like an emerging artist winning a Grammy. How do I use that? Or who's going to be, you know, who's going to be interested in what I'm talking about? And there was like some months where I had to figure it out. But while I was trying to figure it out, what was so crazy is that I had these ideas of things that I wanted to do. Of course, I meet Kathy, you know, like things like that happen, you know, like where I'm like at an event and then Kathy's sitting behind me. And we're like, oh, and when Gina Belafonte said, hey, I want to just shout out some guests in the room, and we're both stand up and we're both right next to each other. But there's these connections that formed, and also like, and that they also align with some things that I've been wanting to do. And specifically is to, you know, start this Artwell Coalition, which is this nonprofit that I wanted to start, and also start the podcast and all of these things. So I was still in that transition moment where I wasn't really sure what I was doing. And then all of a sudden around, I would say like October, it clicked, and I don't know what it was. I think I just let everything settle, and everything was just like, let's go. And my ideas were there. I took the step, and then there was actually a land. There was land to step on, you know, that those types of things. So yeah,
you know, I think there's a book coming or a something of the Life According to Iman, and that sort of correction and then new direction. And then you said how to clear muddy waters, you let it settle. And then you said you don't necessarily solve the problem, you dissolve the problem. You've got all these cool phrases that are coming through. And I'm just seeing it as a little handbook that I need, you know, sitting in the bathroom where people can really like absorb this stuff.
Yeah, I love that.
Packing on that one, please. So far, you're a good storyteller, you know, you bring them alive. I love it.
I know already we were going to ask the same question, because I feel like right now, Life According to Iman's sort of living guidebook is this Artwell project that you were talking about getting excited about. And I think for so many people, like I get really excited about an artist winning a Grammy and then listening inside to their, you know, as Kathy would say, your noisy spirits, but, you know, just listening within to your own muses, your own intuition, your own compass. And instead of taking the predetermined course of doing more features and whatever it is that people tell you to do, you listen within and you say, I want to create, you know, an art focused nonprofit that brings people together in creativity and wellness. And I think that that is a new template for being an artist that people need to hear, that that can be what someone's direction leads them to. And so I'm just really excited to hear more about your project. And of course, because it's under the Creative Visions sort of family umbrella, which is just the most magical, I think, community of people around the world who are this intersection of like high performing artists who are also so heart led. So I would just love for you to tell us a little bit more about what developed out of that stillness that is now Artwell. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, so one of the things that is an ethos that came to mind is that in order to heal the world, we need to heal the artist. And it's, you know, since artists are the emotional first responders of the world, then how we got to make sure that we're in a good space. And also there needs to be incentive structures for artists to come together and not only think about wellness and mindset, but also think about social impact and creating art that somehow like elevates the greater good. And so that's kind of the ethos of this project. The Artwell Coalition is a mixture of these writing camps. Right before I met Kathy and was a part of Creative Visions, we did two writing camps. They were these wellness retreats where we brought artists out to a space in Topanga Canyon, and they went through certain, you know, I guess it's like maybe Asian like ritual practices, meditations and mantras and all these types of things. It was really beautiful. And so we went there and we cultivated a really beautiful space. And then we wrote music from that space, and it was amazing. It was beautiful. Actually, it was almost as life-changing as the Grammy that night. It was just because it was all of these artists and activists coming together for one intention. And And so the thing that I realized when I, especially when I met Kathy, we read with the We Are the World documentary, I was thinking like, how can we create micro We Are the Worlds all over the place where we bring artists together where, and it could be a mixture of the local artists in that community with a global artist, and we create music together. And then that music becomes a vehicle to raise money for charities. And so that's the crux of the writing camp and the releases from that camp. So for instance, even with Deliver, the song that I won the award for, we raised money for the Palestinian Children's Relief Fund based off of the streaming of that record. And now, so there's other ways we have to do it too. I was just talking to Aloe Black about this recently, that we have to figure out ways that we can create, you know, create campaigns around artists, putting music together and raising money for a certain cause. And that's that particular part of the process. Then there's also a podcast too. It's called Artivism, which I just launched that a month ago.
Send it to us. We haven't gotten to experience that yet.
Oh yeah. So I just launched it a month ago and it's awesome. I mean, I've shot 10 episodes already. And we shoot it right here in my house. I have a stage in my house, and it's pretty cool. And the studio's in the back. And so I've already had 10 guest artists on, and it's about artist wellness, mindset, helping artists navigate this digital age with their music, and mm-hmm. also being able to create it from a good-hearted, well-centered space. And also talking about social impact. Like we had a guy on. He's an artist named Adiv, and he has this really large page called Adiv Unsolicited, where he speaks on political and social, like community things, especially things that impact the Black community. And so mm-hmm. it was a great conversation. So also launching this podcast is a part of it as well. So yeah, so these are two things that I'm really, really excited about, and I've been getting off the ground, of course, trying to organize things, but we're just the beginning stages of it. But it's really promising. And it's so funny too. I can get an artist to get on a podcast before I can get them in a studio, which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
Because I've been talking to artists, like people that I could probably ask them to get in the studio, but they'll probably be like, oh, I don't know. But I ask them to be on a podcast and they're down. So I've been talking to a lot of really great artists about it. And so I'm excited.
I'm so glad that you and I were sitting right in front of each other. If this helped in any way to have the nonprofit status and to give a shine a brighter light on what you're interested in doing. You know, sort of, you don't know yet too much about Tihani, what her latest project is, which really is a line. I want to just talk about that because when you're here, you have to really be in his backyard.
Yeah, I know. I'm actually, what I would love to see is us to potentially cook up something where at the center in Malibu for Creative Visions, where we could host an Artwell and Artivist podcast recording that's connected and combined to what Kathy is mentioning, which is that I'm basically connecting with all of the different projects under the Creative Visions umbrella and then hosting these sessions that are called Unbecoming. And it's for people exactly like you who have been becoming and continue to become in a very unconventional, what I call like an unbecoming path. So rather than becoming all these versions of what we thought success were that we got fed, it's like your success and your contribution to the world is actually that you continue to unbecome all the things that you thought you had to be and the ways you had to be and the ways you had to do it. And I think the way that you're talking about, first of all, I just want to say healing the world through healing the artist is such an incredible and beautiful, incredible path to be on. So thank you for doing that, because that is truly, you know, that is, I think, such an overlooked and underrated and deeply necessary part of where we are in human history right now. And even, you know, in Kathy's book, Boundless, she constantly references this brave way of being and seeing. And I think that artists are the ones who really lead that bravery in the world. But if our artists are being brave and then also not necessarily ever being nourished, it's like you get burnt out, because it's very, very challenging to be brave in a world that is constantly grating on all of your, you know, your nervous system, your resources, your reserves. And then if you don't have this replenishing space where artists and creative people can pour into each other and understand what it means to practice wellness in a way that works for a creative person, then you have all of your artists who are trying to encourage people to be brave, actually just feeling like bitter and resentful and apathetic and, you know, addicted and all of these things. So like healing that feedback loop is such a powerful thing. And I just want to honor you both because you're both talking to the people who often don't get spoken to because people assume that we don't need it. You know, people who appear brave seem to be left in this category of not actually being healed or restored. And we're the ones who sometimes need it the most because we're carrying so many other people's courage on our shoulders.
Beautifully said. Yes.
I'm wondering about the role of faith in you, Iman, because that we're tapping into wellness and health, but that sort of spiritual health and wellness, how does that work for you?
Well, what's funny, my name means faith. My Iman means faith. So that's my mom. So I have to give it to my mom. She put that intention in when I first came out. But it's a really important part of my identity and practice because it's interesting. Right after, so I told you the story when I had written a song. It became Desperado for Rihanna. I ended up getting dropped from Interscope. And it was a pretty tumultuous time for me because it was like, well, what do I do? Should I quit music? I honestly thought I was going to quit music. And so I decided to take a break that year, or it was like not the whole year, just for a few months, and figure out what is the relationship between my mood and my and how I feel with my environment. Mm-hmm. Why do they feel so connected? Like my manager would say, hey, you know, Mateo was my name at the time. He'd say, Mateo, you know, like when you're feeling good, like the label's calling me, I'm getting like, I'm not even fielding things, but they're coming back like recommendations and like all that kind of stuff. But when you feel terrible, nothing's happening. And I would wonder, what is that relationship, you know? And that led me down this spiritual path of really like going in deep with like Deepak and Eckhart Tolle and all of those, you know, greats and just figuring out what is the relationship, you know? And there was this great metaphor that if reality is a mirror, you can't tell the mirror to smile. You have to smile first. And it is that concept, you know. That's a good one. I mean, I didn't
love that.
So that's why it's a really important part of my practice. And I think that artists are the ones that know this the most, you know? Like you know that there's something out there that's leading you and guiding you. Like even ideas, when you come up with a great song or a melody comes out, it surprises us. Like, it's not like, oh, I knew I was going to do that. No, it's like, God, like that song is crazy. Like, it's shocking because it feels so beyond us, you know? And I love that idea, which you're talking about unbecoming, because it's like, it is unraveling all of those things, all the muck and things that we think are us. And then getting to the God us, you know, like that center. And that's why spirituality is really important.
Wow. You know, cause I feel I don't like poetry particularly. I've never been attracted to any of it. And it was like, I was this conduit, and not to sound grandiose, but I don't know where this stuff came from. And, you know, I had to kind of get out of the way. It started in COVID. And then it was during when we had the burns, I was in the burn zone and I was locked in a basement. I don't know if that works for you or, you know, how do you open the tap? That's another one of my poems. How do you open that tap? How does that happen?
Yeah, I know. That's a good question. I don't know how to open the tap. I think it's all about priming. It's not necessarily like it's priming the energy to do it. You know, like if I want the tap to be open right now so bad, then I'm really focused on it not being open and it doesn't open up.
Yeah.
But when I'm going through my day and my life open, like open to the sun or the love or the little small things everywhere, then I'm on the energy of just being open, you know, like I'm on that wavelength. And that means that by the time I get to the studio, I'm just going to be open, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, it's really about trying to prime the pump. And that takes a little bit of foresight and a little bit of not just living life in a reactionary way, you know, where we're just like, oh, okay, now this, I'm watching the news. Now that's influencing my, because we're always under the influence of something, you know?
Yeah,
so it's about figuring out what you want to be under the influence of. And that's a proactive move.
Honestly, you are a philosopher. Move aside Eckhart.
Yeah, I'll stop.
No. Michael Beckwith, we love him, but man, Iman is on en route. You're so flipping eloquent, and the music is so powerful, and your journey has been such an interesting one, the trajectory of pauses and plowing ahead and ups and downs and ins and outs and overs and unders and throughs. I am so grateful that we have had this opportunity to tap into the world according to Iman. That's going to be what we call this version. But man, is there anything you want to say in conclusion that we haven't talked about, or we haven't, that you haven't said to us that we need to know?
Well, I am, first of all, I am grateful for you two and this conversation. I'm so inspired. I can't wait to learn more about Unbecoming and working with you on some stuff in Bali. We can definitely do that. Let's make that happen.
Yes, happening.
And Kathy, you continue to be such a light and energy. And it's infectious even when I'm in your company. It's coming through the Zoom call, like the Riverside call, it's coming through. And so it's really inspiring. And it's also inspiring that you're holding a space for creatives and artists to be able to go into these places. And, you know, because a lot of times labels they're not focused on this. They're not trying to help artists become better people and citizens. You know, that's not really what it's about. So I appreciate you creating the space for that. And I'm so thankful that we got to meet. Yeah. I mean, I think lastly is that anybody listening out there, I encourage you to really like think about what lights you up really, and not even caring about what someone else is doing or what you were taught you had to do. Because right now in this crazy world we live in, we need that version of you. We need the version of you that's turned on by exactly what you're turned on by. And that's the thing we need. And however we can help make that happen, let's all come together and make that happen.
Man, Martha Graham is, that noisy spirit is cheering loudly about your life force and the
Yes.
Thank you for the most boundless conversation imaginable. And thank you, Tihani, for your totally becoming so whole with us in an unbecoming fantastic way. So thank you to both of you, and can't wait for round two. Can we do this again?
And I want to say, like, this, my book is all, I went through all of
this. I love it.
Yeah.
I'm like, so excited.
When I first got it, it was great. It's so good. So,
I love it. Yes, you've dignified it. We left spaces in the book for people like you. We said we need more space here. Yes.
Just made me so happy. Thank you. You
know, yeah, I did. I was there.
You said, I don't know if anybody's listening. And look, he was listening. He did something. Oh, yeah. We love you, Iman, Jordan.
Love you too. Love you both.
Thank you very much. Much love. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Tihani and I loved being with Iman Jordan, and we hope you did too. If so, please like, share, and subscribe for another boundless conversation. Can't wait to see you.